Welcome to Peterson's Bow Hunting Radio, the official podcast of hardcore bow hunters. From the latest archery equipment and expert shooting advice to proven bow hunting tactics and the sport's biggest personalities, we've got you covered. Now, here's your host, editor Christian Bird.
All right, welcome back to Peterson's Bow Hunting Radio. We are the voice of bow hunting, and today is going to be, I say this every time, but I mean it today more than ever, an absolutely fantastic show because we have got the closest thing to a superhero that we have on the Peterson's Bow Hunting team. That's Captain Claypool, Mr. Eddie Claypool, live and in person. Eddie, how's it going, buddy?
Great, man. Glad to be able to visit with you.
That's all you got for me after an introduction like that, Eddie? Come on! Get fired
up! Humbled me. You humbled me with that. I'm kind of blushing right now.
You started calling yourself the captain, and I love it. Captain Claypool, you know who it makes me think of? You remember the old cartoons, Captain Caveman? And he was kind of like this crazy dude. He had like a club in one hand and this big shaggy hairdo and like an animal skin like over him. And he would just, he would beat the tar out of everybody.
Well, I don't beat the tar out of everybody, but I'm a pretty eccentric character, they tell me.
Well, Captain Claypool's about as good as it gets for those who read Peterson's Bow Hunting on a regular basis.
You are
the king of DIY, and today we're going to talk about elk hunting.
Yep.
But before we talk about elk hunting, I want to real quick talk about goat hunting because it actually ties into elk. You know, our September issue is going to be coming out real soon, all about elk hunting. For the most part, you know, a lot of elk content in there. But you've got a story in there, which was one of the favorite stories I ever read by you, called Goats Don't Fly. And you actually didn't hunt elk last year for the first time in a long, long time because you drew a goat tag.
Yes, I've, you know, dreamed of those exotic species like moose, sheep, and goats all my life. And finally, the odds of the, you know, draw come my way, and I got a goat tag in Idaho and just decided to dedicate my whole time to it. And it was the first time in my adult life I did not pursue elk, but, you know, I wanted a little change. Variety is the spice of life.
Well, and Eddie got some change, and he had probably one of your crazy adventures of a lifetime of crazy adventures. That was one of the craziest, I would imagine.
Yeah, it ranked right up there, and it taxed me to the maximum amount. It would have been a difficult one on me even in my 30s, but now in my late 50s, it was mentally and physically about, you know, almost over my ability, but I was proud of myself. I got her done, and the ending didn't turn out the way I hoped. But overall, the trip was great. I endured the extreme physical and mental, you know, involved in getting it myself back in there and hunting goats. And just, you know, people will find out about the ending when they get the issue.
When they can get all the details when you read the magazine. But suffice it to say that Eddie tagged his goat, and after he run his arrow through it, it took a Captain Caveman right off the side of the mountain.
That's putting it mildly. I mean, it was half a day before I even found the thing at the bottom. Oh God!
So anyway, I just wanted to mention that because it did kind of tie into elk, because I'm going to guess that, you know, as cool as that goat hunt was, I know because you said at the start of that article, it kind of broke your heart a little bit not to be in elk country last fall, didn't it?
Yeah, elk has been my driving force. Even though I'm a whitetail guy, I grew up around them, and I've cut my teeth with whitetail and hunted them all my life, and I do love them. There's nothing like them. Elk have just been my number one pet peeve for close to 40 years. They fired me up in the around 1980, and I've lived all year, every year for elk. And elk are, you know, you either got a passion for them or you don't care to mess with them. Usually you're not in between, you know.
So 40 years of chasing elk, and in all that time, you've never done an outfitted hunt, have you?
No, I have not. You know, when you start out that young and tackle it that hard, you never get to where you feel like you need any help after so long. You learn so much on your own, and you get so addicted to the satisfaction of, you know, learning everything the hard way, I guess. Because even at that, when you're in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't get too hard, and it's, a lot of people get as much thrill out of the mental and physical conditioning and discipline and involved in it as they do out of the hunt itself. So yeah, I just done it all on my own.
And how many elk would you say that you've killed in your lifetime, Eddie?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because somebody had been asking me that a few times over the last few years, and I never knew. I finally sat down and tried to figure it up, and I quit counting around mid-30s on mature bulls. So And then you can throw in a few other cows and different things. But I have been blessed that I haven't been 100% on my elk hunt, but darn close. And the years that I didn't kill an elk, it was only because I would be too selective or something. You know, I would say that if I was out to kill a mature bull of some, you know, size, I would be 100%.
That's incredible, because yeah. And you know, actually, before I even move on, every yeah. single one of those with a bow, right, Eddie?
Yeah, all with bows, and of course, back in the early 80s, you know, some fairly primitive bows and equipment, no range finders and a whole lot of things that weren't, you know, around today to help. No Google Earth type stuff, no GPSs, you know, but... You know, it's kind of like anything you do in life. You learn it the hardest way to begin with, and then it gets easier as you get wiser. And of course, the technology of today and different things have changed enough to aid you a lot in your, you know, rounding the learning curve off. So today, you know, you can get to be a good elk bow hunter with, you know, quicker than what it took me to.
Yeah. So, I mean, what an opportunity for me and all the listeners today, because you just heard it. And you know, that's not bragging at all. You know, I mean, I asked you, Eddie, here's a guy on the other end of the line who's killed, you know, probably 35 mature bulls, a bunch of cows, you know, probably well over 40 elk in 40 years with his bow. Obviously, you've hunted multiple states in many of those years. But that success rate, you know, even let's say it's 80, 85%. That's incredible,
right,
Eddie, because what's the average DIY success rate for a DIY bow hunter anywhere in this country?
Well,
probably 10%.
Yeah, or less, because, I mean, when they do their statistics, you know, they, a lot of states, now you can go to the great states with the great tags that are hard to draw, like Arizona, and the statistics on success get a little higher, up in the 30-35%
range. Well, sure, but those are in units where only, you know, 2% of the people who apply are getting tags.
Exactly. I mean, if you're talking about a public land hunt, across-the-counter type tag, and then throw in DIY, I mean, I don't know that the percent of success on that could average down around below 10% even, maybe, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Single digits, you know, maybe. Yeah. Like, I did a DIY hunt in Colorado last year, and I just wrote the article about it, and I looked up on Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and I think in the unit where we hunted, for any elk, not just bull, but any elk at all, I think the success rate for archery hunters was 11%. And I think if you went for bull, it went down to like 6 or 8%. So,
well, that's another important factor I didn't think about, because when you see this average success rates of a state, that considers, you know, everything from calves to cows to immature bulls, you know, and basically all I really have addressed in my lifetime is a mature bull issue, the bull that is like a 5x5 or better, you know. So
yeah, so let's talk about all the gear and the gadgets and the technology and everything. It sounds like what you're starting to say is, you know, in some ways, from a technology and equipment standpoint, you know, elk hunting today in 2017 is a lot easier than it was in, say, 1987.
Well, that's 100% correct from about one half of the perspective. The one thing that has gotten tougher is the, you know, the amount of available hunting available, because 20 years ago, 30 years ago, just about everywhere out west was pretty much of almost accessible over-the-counter type tags and open to, you know, any DIYer about anywhere. Now, there were some draw states then, but now it's gotten to where, you know, a large percentage of everything is hard to get, or, you know, more in-depth tags to acquire. The amount of public land that's open across the counter is reduced. But with the technology and all the helpmates, yes, it is absolutely much easier to become successful, and you know, that's easier. Now, the means to get to that success, which is the physical and mental part of the hunt itself, it basically is still the same as it was the day I walked into the game, because, you know, public land across-the-counter tags, if you go do it on your own, you're going to have to still invest the kind of physical and mental effort that I did, you know, 40 years ago. It's not any easier there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, you know, just in terms of, you know, physical ability. Everybody, you know, everyone always talks about getting in shape for an elk hunt. You know, how many people actually do it, and, you know, how hardcore do you need to be about it? I mean, do you, do you really, you know, pound the pavement all summer to get ready for your elk hunts?
Well, I could go on forever and ever about that. That's a tremendous topic for me, because it depends. I mean, honestly, in my earlier years, I worked a seriously hard job all my life, a construction worker, union pipe fitter, welder. I busted my butt all day long at work, and I didn't even know it. It was a way of life to me, but I stayed in tremendous shape just from work. It would be like a guy going to the gym and working eight hours a day, 5 to 7 days a week, and in 105 degree heat, and you name it. So I would, you know, I was in real good shape just when I would start the game. And, you know, even at that, I would always go to the mountains for about 5 weeks on an elk hunt. And the first week was still nevertheless very hard on me. I would usually get altitude sickness and have some problems. But as I went into my second and third week, I'd start to come out of that funk. And by the end of the second to third week, I was getting into shape that would be, cardiovascular-wise, would be up there with, you know, probably Olympic athletes. And by the end of a month, I would have been very, very happy to have tried anybody that wanted to try me, all the way to the Lance Armstrongs, because I would get to the point of literal supernatural mental and physical abilities. I could go like the Energizer Bunny. I could climb 10,000 vertical feet a day and put 14-hour days in and fall on the ground, sleep like a baby, eat 700 calories a day and jump up, do it again. I would always drop from 150 pounds to 136 in those first 2 weeks. And then my body would go, okay, I got to stop right here or he's going to kill me, you know. And I'd stay at 136 pounds for the next month. And I was a lean, mean mountain, you know, peeling machine. And here's what I'm getting at. In my first 10 years of elk hunting, I probably needed to be that aggressive because I didn't have the wisdom to kill them with my head. And so in your early elk hunting career, it's really good to be young and in that kind of shape, because you're going to need to be able to almost run them down and choke them to death, because, you know, you may not, when you're a younger guy, you're not going to have the savvy yet. So you do it with your feet. Now, as I've gotten older, I don't need nearly that kind of work, because I can kill them a lot more with my head, you know. And so it kind of meets in the middle when you're in your, I started at about age 20, and by the time I was 35, I was like at the top of the pyramid then. I was in probably my most incredible mental and physical shape of my life, and I gained the savvy by then to be pretty effective. And so, you know, it's for me, it's been a life process of 40 years, like we said, you know.
Yeah. Well, suffice it to say, the better shape that you can be in going in to start, the better off you're going to be.
100% for DIY public land across the counter tags. My secret to success, and everybody's always wanted to know this, they want it to be a pill so they can take it or a drink so they can swallow it, but it ain't. It's just simple old blue collar hardcore mental and physical work. And I have killed bulls because I went the extra mile, worked the extra, you know, amount of hard. And there's a lot to be said for just, you know, not giving up. I've killed 20% of them just because it was impossible at the time, and I didn't quit when everybody else would, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the mental aspect is so huge because that's one thing that I find being, you know, not a super experienced elk hunter. You know, I've hunted elk a few times, but not anything like you have. But there's one thing that you can't prepare for back home. You know, I'm an East Coast guy.
Right.
And even if I, you know, work out like a maniac and get myself in great shape, there's no there's no way to prepare for being, you know, 6 or 7 miles from the trailhead and thinking to yourself, because believe me, I'm not afraid to admit it. You know, if this makes me a wuss, then I'm a wuss, Eddie.
I don't think so.
You start to think to yourself, I don't know if I want to kill a bull right here.
Exactly.
Because it's going to take me 2 days to get it out.
Right. Exactly.
And it's 6 miles each way. So it's 12 miles round trip, and I might need 3 or 4 trips to get this thing back to the truck. And now, am I prepared for everything that comes along with that, you know?
Well, see, what you just brought up is one of the topics that most people don't, they don't get past the how do I get the elk, you know, that's as far as they're concerned, but then they get themselves in a bind because, you know, I mean, anybody can put a backpack on and go back in the wilderness far enough to get an elk back in there at 7 or 8 miles, but then that's where the whole world changes, and you had better address that because, no, even in my prime of my life, I couldn't get some elk out from where I killed them. I had to start buddy hunting, and even up to 3 or 4 of us at times, and we just have a deal to where when one of us knocked one down, you know, 10 miles back in the wilderness, everybody else would just shut down, and we all just would go swarm it and start packing. And I mean, it takes a lot of dedication to go in and out 8 miles one way and gain 3,000 or 4,000 vertical feet, you know. But we would do it. Then we got to the, you know, four-legged helper stage, and that's where I spent about 20 years messing with mules and stuff, and that's where you can become almost unlimited on your elk hunting ability then when you get where you pack in with mules or horses.
You need mules or horses. Really, that opens up a world of opportunity that other people can't, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It gives you a big advantage, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because then you're not limited to distances. And you can go to the deepest wilderness, of course, unless you're in Wyoming, where you have to hire an outfitter to hunt in a wilderness area. But anyway, other than that, I mean, we used to go to the Gila Wilderness of southwestern Mexico, and we could pack in 20 miles one way just to get back into the middle of the thing. And, you know, you're hunting virgin ground, and it just, every little thing like that is like one tooth on a gear. Every little tooth you can add on or not have chipped off to up your odds. You know, if you're just upping your odds with one little additional thing you're doing, you're upping it by 5%.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty soon you're up there to where you're beating the system, you know.
Well, let's really start nailing down on brass tacks and giving people something that they can use, okay? You know, I'm gonna preface all this by saying that one thing that Eddie Claypool has and always has had, at least as long as I've known him, that the rest of us, I'm gonna say 99% of the rest of us, just don't have, Eddie. And it's your biggest ally and your number one advantage, in my opinion, is unlimited, virtually unlimited time in the field.
time. Yeah.
That's what you have always ordered your life around, allowing yourself sufficient time to get the job done. And most of us don't have that. Most of us, we have a week, maybe 10 days tops.
Right.
And so, man, we feel the pressure right from the start. We got to make something happen because the clock's ticking.
Yep.
Let's say I want to go on a DIY hunt. Maybe I've done one or two. I haven't been successful. Okay. I haven't been overly impressed with the areas that I visited. So I'm looking for greener pastures and better odds, okay?
Yeah,
Where do I start?
Well, oh gosh. Well, first of all, let's address that time issue. I kind of got a rule that, you know, even for me, because I'm going to be a little more selective and but if you're out to kill a, you know, a representative bull on public land across the counter tag, you know, even in the best locations I know of right now, I don't really think that I can sensibly plan on doing that, you know, and I'm going to allow myself 2 weeks. 1 week, man, if you can get her done in a 1 week outing, you better sure enough like the first thing you get near, because, you know, sometimes I go, you know, every 3 to 5, 7 days to get a good shot to kill an animal of, you know, mature bull. And you may only get one chance in a week. You might not get any, but I always allot 2 weeks if I can. I used to always go, you know, give me a weekend, you know, with a week and then a weekend in the middle and a weekend on the end. That's 2 weeks off work is what you need. And you add 3 weekends in there and you can make a good successful hunt that on your own every year. You know, in 1 week, I don't know what to tell you. You better have some help. You better have some insider on where to do it. You better have a little bit of something going for you. Cause as far as just researching on your own, you could, you know, I don't know what to tell a guy to port. I can't tell you a magical place that's across the counter, public land, that I can run to and necessarily know I'm going to kill a bull in 5 or 7 days of hunting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's it. I mean, like last year, you know, on my hunt, I saw 3 elk on my hunt.
Well, that's not that non-typical either.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I had 3 buddies from Pennsylvania who came out with me. And, they didn't see any elk.
Wow, yeah.
So
that's not undoable. I mean, listen, it depends. I mean, you went to Colorado too, right? You know,
we did. But isn't Colorado like the best place to start for a DIY hunt?
Well, when you say best, it's definitely the most accessible because, I mean, it's pretty well most of the states, probably 3/4 of it's across the counter type tags. And there's unlimited public land in most of it. It's a great place to start, but it's also the tallest hill to climb because it also gets the most hunters. It has a lot of the very most rugged terrain. Most of the elk are all holed up in the godforsakenest places in that rugged terrain after the first week of season. You got to kind of add it all up and come up with a higher percentage deal. I've got 2 ways to kill elk. I usually either kill them right at the very first day or two of season, or I usually kill them the last day or two of season in Colorado. Now, because I'll go up there and glass some alpine, pattern them, and try to put a spot and stalk on them and kill one opening morning sometimes. And it's pretty effective if you're cut out for that. But you've got to exist at 12,000 and above feet to do that. And most people can't hack that very much. They don't want to go that route. Otherwise, I wait till the last week of season, go into some of the hidey holes I know of where these elk have been run to, and you know, in that last week, they're going to still be bugling. They'll pile up somewhere where nobody goes, and you can fall in there then and usually call your bull in. I've often went to Colorado on 4 days of hunting, the last 4 days of season, and I can usually kill a bull every year in those 4 days.
So let's say, you know, what would be some recommendations, whether it's Colorado, some other states? What are some other states that you'd throw out there for a first-time elk hunter that he might want to look at? And then once you've picked the state, how do you go about, you know, obviously, like you say, there's going to be multiple units or areas within each state where you can get an over-the-counter tag. How do you narrow down your search?
Yeah. Well, right off the bat, you can wipe out quite a few states because these states I mentioned real quickly will just be a strictly 100% draw, basically, and they're very hard to get tags, which are Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, Wyoming. Though Wyoming has some tags aren't real hard to draw under the general tag, they call it. Still going to be a drawing, and you still probably won't get it every year. The only states really is Colorado, Idaho, and then they have some general season hunting in Utah in part of the state. Some of it spike only. And then, of course, now Montana is a drawing, but you can usually get a tag every year if you put in the drawing. It's pretty accessible. So you got about half your western states here. I don't deal with the coastal states. I just am out of the game when it comes to California, Oregon, and Washington. I don't have savvy on that at all. But Colorado and Idaho are the two premium states that you can go get tags real easy. So they're the ones I call the Walmart of elk hunting. You know, everybody goes there. And they're good states to focus on. They have tremendous habitat, tremendous populations. You know, Colorado probably has the most elk of any state. It's a no-brainer. You know, so you go there, and that's a good way to find out what you're going to be as an elk hunter. If you can hack out, you know, a year or two or three in Colorado and slowly get that learning curve going to where you feel like you're going to, you know, start having success, then you're cut out for a lifetime of elk hunting. And then within the first year or two or three, you walk away and you go, you know, this just plain stinks. This ain't for me. And you don't have the mental wherewithal to begin with for it, so you might as well give it up and go hunt deer, because you got to be mentally tough. You got to set your mind to it. Just remember this: I'm just a common old guy. I don't have anything special going for me at all, and yet I set my mind at, you know, 1980s. I'm gonna figure this out, and I'm gonna get as good as you can get at it, and it can be done. It's just how bad do you want it? You know?
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's say you're gonna go to Colorado or Idaho, and you got a couple right. buddies, and you say, "Let's go do this. Let's try it."
Right.
We might be biting off more than we can chew, but we want to. You know?
Right. And, right.
So. So what do you do to find an area? You go on, I mean, do you look at, like, the success rates, the harvest reports from the state departments of wildlife? Do you, you know, get on Google Earth? Do you go on online chat boards? Do you call the biologists out there? I mean, how do you do it?
That would be fine for the beginners, because they're going to glean some knowledge from all of those methods. It'll be useful to them. I don't deal with that anymore, because I just basically know elk and their habitat, and I just go right straight to maps and Google Earth-like stuff. I don't need nobody telling me anything about nothing to do. All I got to do is look at the habitat and put in conjunction with, you know, the access to it and things like that, and then I can go there, and there's going to be elk there. Elk are, you know, in Idaho and Colorado, if it's elk country, it's got elk in it. Now, I know that sounds weird, because, yeah, a guy can go there and spend a week and not see an elk.
Oh, there were elk. Don't get me wrong, Andy. Yeah, there were right. elk in our area.
Right.
They were hiding
out when you were there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We'll get to all that. But listen, sure. Okay, so what are you saying, Eddie, when you say, I just got to look at the map, I just got to look at a Google Earth, and if I see a good area, I'll know it. What makes a good elk area?
Good area.
Eddie Claypool's mind.
Okay, in the state of Colorado, it's going to be somewhere probably, you know, if you were to get right to the, you know, pin the tail on the donkey, it's going to be in the 10,000 foot elevation range. Now, don't get me wrong, Colorado has elk that live down at 5,000 or 6,000 feet. But due to the fact that mankind has most of Colorado's elk living outside of their preferred habitat, which would be foothills regions, which are inhabited and accessible, so the elk can't really be there unless they're on private ground. Most Colorado elk are in rugged, mountainous, black timbered, harder to get to terrain. So just that right there alone is all you need to know. Look at anything from 9,000 to 11,000 feet in elevation that's got, you know, black timbered, fairly inaccessible country, and it's a no-brainer, you know. And then if you want to narrow that down, look where the foot trails are. Look where the trailheads are. Look what drainages don't have trails. Look what drainages don't have high country lakes in them. Because you got a lot of other people in the woods all year, especially in the summer, besides you and your hunting. There's going to be people going to high country lakes to go fishing. There's backpackers or tree huggers. There's people running around you know, I don't know, smoking dope in Colorado, but whatever. You want to find areas that's off the, you know, chosen destination of most people. You know, get away from, you know, if it doesn't have a foot trail up it, it's an elk drainage. If it's got a foot trail up it, you better get into the side drainages that don't have them.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you talk about the dark timber, you know, and this is where, you know, we start to get into tactics a little bit, but, you know, there's the elk hunting that you see on TV, and and then there's elk hunting. And, and you know, the elk hunting that you see on TV, if you're planning on going to a over-the-counter unit and you think that you're going to get your bugle tube out and you're going to have a nice big bull just come running in and say, shoot me, I'm going to tell you something right now. I think I might have bugled two or three times that whole week, but I think it was pretty well pointless, you know? And I'll tell you, the guy, there was two people out of my camp who were successful. One guy had a tag for a neighboring unit, which was a limited draw unit. And he and his son packed 7.5 miles in with horses and spiked out there and killed a good bull. And, and so there was only really one guy out of the eight of us that were hunting in the over-the-counter unit that that killed a bull. And you know how he did it? He didn't use a call. He never called. And you, what he did is he hiked up to the rim rock and the nastiest place where he could get to. And then his plan was to still hunt through all the patches of dark timber that butted up against that sheer cliff face rim rock. And he just stumbled into a bull that had been hiding in one of those patches of dark timber. And he was just lucky enough that when that thing stood up, he was able to grab an arrow out of his quiver and get knocked and drawn and shoot the thing before it ran off.
That's just about as classic a description of how you're going to get your elk killed in Colorado as it comes right there, because by the time you know you're there in the middle of the season and the rut's going on, these elk are literally educated to death and relocated, and they're hiding out, and all your classic stuff, your TV stuff, is about as far-fetched as, you know, it gets. You know, most of TV stuff is more in more open country and more gentle country, too, because it's better for filming, but, you know, and everything. And that's just not reality. Most of those hunts are either on ranches or in extremely limited draw scenarios. Public land don't work that way. After the first 2 days of Colorado season, all your classical, beautiful elk country is going to about have to get itself devoid of elk. They're going to relocate to canyons and up against rim rock. They're going to quit bugling at all during the day much. You know, I have a habit of wanting to get up 2 hours before daylight and go out and locate a bull, you know, and I know most people don't go for that crap, but, you know, and it takes a lot of doing to get out and roam around in the wilderness in, you know, 2 hours of darkness in the morning. But I will often camp up on high ridge lines between two different drainages that split them, parallel them, and I will get up 2 hours before daylight, especially on good moonlit nights, and just ease along through that, you know, ridge and listen off into the drainages for a bull, because they're way more susceptible to bugling, you know, in the darkness, you know. And then drop down in there and try to get on them at first light and do like your buddy. Still hunt along. Let the elk make the noise. He'll eventually growl or squeal or something, and then still hunt him, you know, stalk him. But keep your mouth shut in Colorado with a bugle after the first part of the season. You're just going to run them off.
Absolutely. You know, what do you recommend in terms of, like, camping and stuff like that? I mean, you're a big believer in, you know, you can't be having to come all the way out of the woods every day, because it just takes too much time and energy.
Yeah, there's very few places in Colorado you can drive to the end of the most rugged roads and set up a base camp and hunt out of that base camp effectively. It just, it's going to disappear on you or already be gone by the time you get there. I mean, it's not impossible. It gets done. And I know places I could kind of do that a little bit, but I've got so many years of, you know, the average guy, he better, you know, if he's not going outfitted, then he better get a backpack or better bring his horses and just go to remote country. That's the secret to success. And then even at that, that ain't a cure-all. You know, even in the wilderness country, you know, there's going to be 50% of that that's going to be hammered with people. And so you got to just, you know, like your buddy did, what did he do that for? He figured out some most rugged, last place in the world people went was up against that rim rock and that dark timber, and he was correct. That's why those elk were there bedded, and that's what you got to look at. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, public land across-the-counter tag elk hunting today is not what it was 30 years ago when I, literally, let me give you a quick example. 30 years ago in Colorado, where I first started hunting, I could go park my truck along a state highway, camp a quarter mile off of it, and during the night be up all night long listening to bulls bugling around me above the highway, below the highway, get up at daylight, go any direction I wanted, and hunt elk. And now, 30 years later, you can't get a bugle out of an elk except at night, and you're going to be a mile or two off that highway, probably 2,000 foot above or below it. You know, I mean, things have changed. People pressure has become, I'd say the people pressure where I first hunted in Colorado in 80 compared to now is on a scale of 1,000% more. It's ridiculous. And it ain't just hunters. Everybody from mountain bikers to photographers to fishermen to you name it are out running around, you know.
Well, you paint kind of a bleak picture, Eddie. Why bother?
Because it's a noble undertaking, and if you are a bow hunter, you will not find a challenge to set your teeth against much better, and the rewards are tremendous. Everything about it will make you feel 10 foot tall and bulletproof. But it all depends, and I've took so many people over the 40 years that I've done this. I've took some of my best friends I went to school with. I've taken people that I thought were as mentally tough as it gets. I've taken people that were way more physical than I, athletic, you know, big, strong, muscular people. But, you know, it's all about your mindset. It's just what blows your skirt up. If you take to this elk hunting thing with a bow, you know, do it yourself, then you're going to be the guy that's going to get it done. So it ain't going to happen overnight. It's going to take years. It's going to take years to really get it up to that 50% or 75% success rate, you know. And, you know, you've got to be the guy that has a passion for it. And I don't know what percentage of the people that try it end up with that passion in their blood, but they're the ones that will take it to the level that I have, you know. And the other guys will be the ones that will do it. I know guys that aren't passionate about it, but they've done it for 20 years consecutive, and they will kill four or five bulls, you know what I mean, in 20 years, you know. And they enjoy it, and they do it at a level that's very enjoyable. And I don't have a problem with that. That's great. I think everybody ought to do it, you know, or bow hunting, you know, undertaking ought to be at whatever level we want it. Not everybody is going to do it like a nut. And because if we all did it at the level I do it, there wouldn't be no seasons, there wouldn't be no elk left. If everybody had 100% success, where would we be with it, right?
Sure. So you know? Talked about calling. It doesn't sound like you, uh-huh. know, you don't feel like it's necessary to be an expert caller by any means to go on a deal.
Not at all.
Now, what about some of these other tactics that people always write about? You know, I mean, we run articles in the magazine, you know, sitting on water holes, sitting on wallows, maybe even bringing a tree stand in there and setting up on a trail somewhere. Do you ever do any of that kind of stuff?
I'm not a tree guy on elk because I spend so much time, you know, whitetailing that I get my fill and thrill of sitting in a tree stand. But now I have a friend from California that I've known 30 years now. He's pretty well a straight-up tree stand guy, and he has killed large amounts of big bulls off of wallows and springs and different little ponds and different things. It all depends on the type of habitat. You're not really going to be successful hunting the high country of Colorado sitting on water much, because there's water everywhere. I mean, every draw has snowmelt and springs. You get down lower in the mid to lower elevations of Colorado in the oak brush and canyony and more arid. Yeah. And, you know, New Mexico and Arizona and some of these states specialize in water hole hunting. People fist fight over water holes in some of them states. But, you know, tactic wise, to me, right now, I'd tell you, spot and stalk. I mean, calling was at its peak 20 years ago, and the elk have gotten pretty savvy. You know, for 30 years, the dumb ones that come running into a bugle have gotten weeded out of the herd, and it's just made a more refined elk. Elk are becoming more whitetail-like now, especially on public land in states like Colorado. They're getting to where they're, you know, they're getting to be a lot more smart of an animal to hunt, and, you know, they don't just run 2 miles around the mountain anymore a lot and leave you a mountain behind. They'll play the game with you. They'll hide out in nooks and crannies like whitetail do, and that bugling to me anymore, all I really use it for is maybe a location to locate a bull, and I may bugle in the night, you know, and get him to bugle, and then I try to just shut up and move in there, and it doesn't matter if it takes you 3 or 4 hours. I mean, it's well worth it, ain't it? If it takes you 3 or 4 hours to ease down in a canyon and figure out where this thing's at and get them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, absolutely. And what about tackle for elk?
Well,
do you use a lot of different equipment with your bow than you do for a whitetail?
Nope. Same rig, whatever blows your skirt up. You know, I don't try to recommend certain archery equipment. The key to me being a good bow hunter is shoot whatever you're confident in and what you like. I don't get swayed by opinion. I use what I like. It's simple. It's dependable. You know, I shoot a Matthews and, you know, and the standard, you know, broadhead, fixed blade, 125 grain broadhead and the standard carbon arrows. I've tried them all. I'm using bill tips now, but whatever. But I'm just saying, equipment wise, you know, a GPS is a good thing to have in your pocket, a little lightweight one for, you know, marking waypoints, because, you know, you can get turned around or you can kill an elk in somewhere that, you know, you don't want to walk away from it because you're not sure you're going to find your way back to it. And then one other thing is a rangefinder, because if you're in a spot and stalk elk, you're going to end up with some shot opportunities that are going to be out there at ranges you don't want to be trying to judge cold turkey with your, you know, just your mind. You might shoot at 40, 50, depending, you know, people shoot farther. You need a rangefinder because, you know, if you know that how far this elk is, you can kill them. But other than that, you know, just take a good pocket camera to record your outing with. And I don't use a lot of fancy gear. I go solo a lot, backpack with a light camp, you know, a one-man tent pad, sleeping pad. I don't do a lot of multiple-day backpacks anymore where I'm back in the wilderness for 3 or 4 days at a time. I do a lot of what I call overnighters. You know, my day will start at noon on my schedule, and I will eat a big meal at noon, load my backpack up, and by usually 1:30, I'm at a trailhead, and I'll start packing back into the country and may go 3, 4, 5, 6 something miles and be setting up a spike camp by 4 in the evening. And then I will, you know, do a little refreshment for 30 minutes, maybe doze off 15 minutes and get up and go on an evening hunt. Get up the next morning, you know, maybe an hour before daylight, try to get on a bull at daylight, hunt until maybe 10 in the morning. Then I'm back picking my backpack camp up and going out to the trailhead and getting out around noon. That's my typical 24-hour cycle on these things. And I used to do that 7 days a week for 5 weeks straight. And nowadays, I'll do a day of that, and I'll take a day off and enjoy camp, go fish, take you to town or something, you know what I mean? I'll hunt every other day or something, you know?
That's where you get to spend time roasting weenies around camp and catching trout.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm telling you, you know, I've been blessed to get to climb the ladder of maturity. So, you know, my goals are met, and I'm going into the golden years of it all, and I've got to stop and smell the roses, because the first 30 years of my elk hunting life, I blew by everything, you know, 60 miles an hour, and didn't stop to smell the roses much because I was wanting to knock a big set of antlers down. And now to me, 90% of my elk hunt now is about the hunt, the whole 9 yards of the hunt. I want the whole experience to be savored. And I actually about got to where I don't even want to kill an elk anymore, because then the godforsaken work starts.
Yeah, almost. You still kill them awful often.
Yeah, well, I guarantee you, people, if I'm around longer, they'll start noticing the slowdown, because I mean, there just comes a point where I've got elk antlers. I don't even have places to put them. And, you know, you mature through all these different stages of ego and different things. And I'm just to point out where, you know, I may go kill some cows and some Colorado spikes along the highway because I can get them out, you know, real easy and things. But it's time to start, you know, doing some nostalgic things. I'm going to go back to some of the ground I first hunted in 1980 and kill me another bull there because I haven't shot an elk there in 10 or 12 years.
Just, well, you and Lou, you know, went on a summer hiking trip out there last year, didn't you?
Exactly. Yes, we did. And that was tremendous. We spent a week there and went up to some of my old elk haunts up in the Alpine basins. And, you know, they're full of wildflowers and the snow melt coming down. And, you know, that stuff means a lot to me. That's where it all began for me. And, I don't know. I'd love to be buried up there someday. My ashes sprinkled up there or something. I don't know, you know, because that is just one of those things that will, you know, I'll take to my grave is that area in Southwest Colorado where it all began for me. And I used to sleep in the back of my truck and on the side of the highway. And I got memories that are, you know, a lifetime long there. And I'm going to go back there and enjoy a little bit of it, and if I can get away from all the people, half the United States of America is up there now.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Eddie, I mean, there's a lot of elk hunting knowledge you've gathered over four decades, and you know, I hope that people can glean through our conversation today and pick up a few things, you know, that they can use, whether it's to, you know, find an area or to temper their, you know, expectations or their method of hunting. You know, I mean, it's like you say, it's not an easy task. It's absolutely not easy. You know, when you're a whitetail hunter, you know, you said you're a whitetail hunter, you know, I'm a whitetail hunter, you know, and when you're a whitetail hunter, and you're a pretty good one. I mean, I like to think I'm a pretty good whitetail hunter, you know?
Sure.
Dude, elk hunting's a whole different ball game. You know what I mean?
Oh, it is.
The country is so big, and, you know, you can feel so small. You know, you give me a farm in Illinois or Iowa or Kansas and show me a topo map or an aerial photo of the farm, and I can tell you exactly, okay, put a tree stand here, here, and here, and I'll have a deer killed within 3-4 days, you know?
Yeah.
But you can't just do that on an elk hunt.
No, and well, I'll tell you the problem is most of the people I see anymore, of course, we're living in a generation where it's all smeared all over the TV. You know, you see all the cream of the crop, and then they see the stuff, you know, I put in the magazines and other people, and they just think, well, you know, it ain't that hard. Well, that's not the truth. It's about as hard as anything you'll do, but if you're the sort of bow hunter that loves a good challenge, bow hunting elk on public land on cross-the-counter tags will rank right at the top of your challenges. Get your hind end out there and get started and expect to spend a few years to get over ground zero. And if you're still in it after a couple of years, then you're going to start getting things going your way. And I can't give a magic pill, I can't give any one thing that really even pinpoints down what the key to success is, other than you better be mentally and physically in this for the long haul. You better plan on it being a long learning curve. And it's, I mean, the first year I went to Colorado in 1980, I chased elk till ATLL froze over and I didn't kill one. I went to Colorado and back two different times during the 5-week bow season, was up there almost the whole time, never killed a bull with my bow. So that right there, you know, I'm telling you, it don't come easy.
Yeah, but you were into elk like all the time, right?
I was in elk a lot, and I could have shot some elk and different things. I was in elk so much, but you got to remember, in 1980, it was a different world. If the average guy like you right now could hunt what I was hunting in 1980 on public land across the counter, he wouldn't have as tough a road hoe as what's out there right now. It's gotten way tougher. It's very difficult now to just go to public land and expect to kill a good, solid, representative bull everybody is just doing it, and it's difficult. It's like a, it's like hunting public land for whitetails. I mean, how many people really want to do that? They don't, because it's so difficult. I mean, we try to find a good piece of private ground where we got a leg up when we get started, you know?
Right, right. Well, right. I will say one thing, you know, I kind of alluded to it earlier.
Uh-huh.
Have a plan for what you're going to do if you're successful.
Right.
Because
right.
a lot of these areas, there's outfitters or horse ranches, you know,
right.
in the area, you know, because there's a lot of ranches out there that just specialize in, like you say, in the summertime, they'll do recreational pack trips, you know.
Right.
So
right.
there's ranches,
right.
there's guys that have horses.
Yeah.
When you're going to a certain area, it's not a bad idea to make some phone calls ahead of time and know that, you know, if you are 5 or 6 miles from the truck and you have an elk on the ground, it's really nice to know that you could call somebody that's got some horses to maybe get in there. At least, even if they can't get right to your bull, they might be able to get within, you know, a half a mile of it or something, and that's going to make your life a whole lot easier.
Yeah, very underutilized tool that's available is just a chamber of commerce of a town. You can call any chamber of commerce in any town where you're going, and they'll be able to tell you anything you need to know about that stuff like that. If you need somebody packing elk out, they'll know who does it and put you in touch with them. And, I mean, it's an underutilized thing. We, you know, we've almost modernized ourselves past the call to the local chamber of commerce, but... You know, I'm telling you, they keep up. They know who the ranchers, the hunters, the farmers, the, you name it. And they can help you. And, yes, you need to have a plan for when that elk hits the ground, because a lot of guys come from the east. They run out there, and when they finally get the success, finally, whether it's first year or third year, then their trip can go sour on them big time fast, because they're not prepared for what's got to be done after that kill, and you can get in trouble with the law and disappoint your own self morally and ethically. So you better think about beyond just getting that elk killed.
Mm-hmm. For sure. No. Well, Eddie, listen, man, I know that you've got a whole pile of catfish to fry up, which is a whole other story, but you got about 15 pounds of fresh catfish filet, and you got some peanut oil to heat up, and unfortunately, I wasn't invited to the fish fry, but I can see, okay, it's okay.
You got a standing invite if you can get your Yankee hide down here.
How far from Pennsylvania to Oklahoma?
Way too far to come eat fish, but you need to just come down and spend a week with me, and we'll do what we do, and you can get the whole 9 yards of the Southern experience in.
Well, I can go run that trot line with you.
Yep, we'll do that. We'll put you out there as a bow, and you can shoot some carp or do whatever you want. I don't care.
Well, that'll be good, Eddie.
Yep.
You know. Listen, man, I appreciate you. I appreciate the fact that in a world of, you know, television celebrities and people who are interested in making names for themselves, you're doing things the same way you've been doing them for the last 40 years. Okay, you may have upgraded from a tent to a travel trailer. You know, you may take your dog and your wife with you now, which you didn't do years ago, but really it hasn't changed all that much. You're still doing the working man way.
Right. And you know, the working men prop up this hunting industry. They're the ones that buy the equipment, and I'm going to represent them and just try to be a good old boy and do what I do, and we'll take it from there, you know, however it falls.
Well, that's Mr. Eddie Claypool, Captain Claypool, folks. Thank you for everything you do for our sport, Eddie, for your contributions ongoing to the magazine. I know people enjoy reliving your adventures and gleaning your wisdom. I wish you continued success in the field, and it's a pleasure to call you my friend and my professional associate.
Likewise. Thank you, and I appreciate everything you do for me, too, and God bless.
Yeah, give Peggy a hug for me, and give Lulu a pat on the head, okay?
Will do. We're going to settle after this catfish. I'll talk to you later.
Yep, bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Peterson's Bowhunting Radio, the official podcast of hardcore bowhunters. Pick up the latest issue of Peterson's Bowhunting on your local newsstand, or check us out on the web at bowhuntingmag.com.